How do you keep your spirits up when your house has been totaled by a tornado and you're still taking care of family members? This is a lesson for all of us. Stay tuned. There's a lot more in store.
Welcome to Doing It Best with Elder Care Success, where we explore ways to relieve the stress, exhaustion, and overwhelm that we all face in caring for an aging parent, frail spouse, or partner. Fear, frustration, emotional and financial strain does not have to be your MO. Stay tuned as we dive into different and new ways of finding more joy together with those that we love and care for, and while keeping our feet solid on the ground. Hang tight, there is a better road ahead.
Hello, everybody. It's Nancy May from Doing It Best with Elder Care Success. And before I get started, I just wanted to ask a couple of favors. First is, wait to the end of the show, because I have found something that I'm testing out myself that I think is really interesting and will hopefully help all of you who are caring for a loved one with some stress. In addition, this is an interesting program that has also been endorsed by a medical doctor to help reduce the plaque in the brain and, well, I wouldn't say reverse Alzheimer's, but I'm not a doctor. However, it does have an impact on, they say, the cognitive impairments of our loved ones, mom, dad, whoever it is. So stay tuned, listen to the end for that one. But before we start, if you or a loved one are going through some stress and strain and don't know what to do, please save this show for yourself, for others, and share it with others. It can be your gift to them, a gift to yourself, because it's our gift to you. And I say our gift because it's not just mine, but it's my guest here today too. My guest is Catherine Lang. Catherine is an amazing lady who I've gotten to know recently, and she just makes me laugh. But we had this incredible conversation the other week about her caregiving journey and some of the things that were amusing, a little wonky, and everything along the way. Catherine is a writer, an author, a coach on writing, but she's also a person that she likes to say is somebody who inspires encouragement, where you can do anything that you feel that you can't do. Really, there are ways that we can all break through all sorts of things. And Catherine, as she also likes to be called, is a snarky rainbow. Hope of encouragement, snarky rainbows, and just face of little bits that you can get through to make your life better and have a few laughs along the way. So Catherine, thank you so much for being here with me. We've already started to laugh even before we recorded. So we have to go back and recapture that one because I know it's a pot of gold at the end of both our rainbows that we can share.
Well, I mean, really, it's important that we laugh. That is why I am big on being a snarky rainbow. I'm big on encouragement because without laughter, we're not going to make it through. I mean, laughter is kind of the fuel of hope. Laughter is the fuel of peace. And surprisingly, it infuses your body with the ability to cope in situations where normally you wouldn't think laughter would give you that, but it does. It breaks through. We talked about that. It breaks through barriers. Laughter breaks through barriers. So I think it's important to laugh.
And I see in your background that says, if you aren't enjoying the journey, it's time to change the rides. And I love that, including your Wonder Woman cape behind you. And I keep looking for those cuffs, you know, that Wonder Woman wore because, well, I have usually a bunch of bangles on one hand, but I don't really do it during the podcast because you'll hear it clink, clink, clink all the time. And it's probably my Wonder Woman coming out in me at some point.
It's because I'm a writer that I don't have the bracelets
it bangs on your keyboard,
yeah,
right? So let's talk a little bit about some of your journey as a caregiver. And for those of you who are listening or watching, I want to share, I'm going to be doing a series of these predominantly because stories of journeys are so important, not just because we need to hear what other people have done and how to do it ourselves, but more importantly, because we need to know that we're not alone in this. And quite often we isolate ourselves, and the whole issue of loneliness is not just an epidemic among other people, but I think it's an epidemic of those of us who retreat as caregivers and don't share that we're doing this. So if you haven't figured out, I'm an extrovert. Hello. Sometimes an inappropriate one. but I try to keep it at least a little under containment here for you. So let's talk a little bit about your journey, Catherine. You not only cared for your own parents, but you cared for in-laws and others and aunts and uncles and the never-ending stream of caregiving. When does it stop, or do we want to stop?
You know, for me, I practiced and learned to practice as a homeschooling mom of three boys. I got very good at focused flexibility. I could work anywhere. And so I was a really good candidate when there was a sick family member to go stay in the hospital with them, because we always made sure that somebody was present to have a second set of ears to hear what was being said.
Oh, thank you for sharing that with me. That's one of my pet peeves. Never leave a loved one alone in the hospital. I don't care whether it's an aide, a family member, whoever it is, you make sure that there's some other butt there sitting next to them, period. Right?
Well, ours started because my father-in-law would make up what the doctor said. And I mean, just randomly, sometimes I think he did it on purpose. Sometimes I think he really heard differently from what they were saying. And we needed to be there to figure out exactly what the doctor was saying to him.
This is not a test.
No, exactly. I mean, it was crazy talk. Sometimes you just look at him and go, no, that is not even close. They didn't even use those words when they were talking to you. So that is why we started doing that. Plus, having medical family, I know how stressed the nurses are and how frustrated family members get because the nurses aren't 24/7 taking care of your family member. And it's because they can't. They don't have that kind of time to allot. That's why they have the call buttons. Being there takes some of the burden off of the nurses and keeps you active in the care process. So we just always make a point of being those people because we can. We've learned to flex our lives so that we can.
Well, and being there gets you the chance to have better care as well, because the family, or I would say the care professionals, the nurses, the doctors, and everybody else there, hopefully they're good ones, actually know that you care. And there's no substitute for being there. So even if it's a little bit more difficult, bring your laptop. Actually, the one situation with my dad, I would always bring donuts in the morning, donuts and a couple of boxes of Joe for the nurses at the nurse's station. And then if he was sleeping, I'd find a table and I'd set it up outside his room and be working away. And one day the nurses said, well, you can set up over here at the nurse's station. So I did. They had extra room. And we laughed, you know, I kept an eye on what was going on. I could hear what was happening with others, but more importantly was my dad. One day they said, could you like never leave? I'd bring fried chicken at dinner time. I probably should have brought a shot of whiskey for them too, but that's just...
I would suspect that's against the rules, but that's just, you know, that's just my, and that is important. Know the rules of where you're going and adhere to the rules. If you're going to go sit, make sure that you can stay overnight, that you're not an inconvenience. Every hospital, every ward, every floor, every nurse, every charge nurse will have different rules that they want you to follow, and just be considerate. And you want them to be considerate to you, so be considerate to them. And that kind of is the standard for life. Just try to be considerate to other people and your life will go on better.
And go the extra mile, just a little bit. It took me an extra 10 minutes and probably another, the amount of donuts and coffee that I got each time, probably another extra $30 or so. But it was okay because it was my way of showing appreciation for them that I see other families weren't doing. They just brushed in and brushed out and expected a lot. And that puts a lot of strain on the system.
And I think that comes because we put so much on medical professionals. We expect the medical professionals to have all the answers. Mm-hmm. And every single person that they deal with is different. All they can do is go by the average. And you're not an average person. You're a unique person. The person that's in the hospital is a unique person. And if they have somebody there that can advocate for them and say, no, we've done this and this and it didn't work, then they're not going to stay in those laws of average. They're going to try to accommodate the uniqueness of you.
But you came from a medical family as well. Your dad, and you've got brothers and other siblings who are in the medical industry. So you would think you would get better care as a result. I've heard people say, well, my sister's a nurse. And therefore, it's like, not always the case, especially if you're not there, right?
Right. If you're not there, it's the go back to the law of average. That's what they're going to work from, is the law of average. This is what expected. There's a reason they call it practicing medicine. I am not a doctor. I did not stay the night at a Holiday Inn. So I can't advocate in that direction either. I do, however, my grandfather was a general practitioner. So literally all of my life, the medical field has been part of my life. And a doctor that doesn't admit that everybody is unique is one that concerns me.
So how do you have that conversation with a doctor? What did you do to do that with your folks?
One is listen, really pay attention. Because if they're talking about the individual, then they tend to be more open to a conversation. And I learned this the hard way when I had a miscarriage. And it was because of the medicine that the doctor gave me.
So it's the trigger words that you listen for along the way.
I listen for trigger words. I watch the behavior. It was really hard during COVID because there wasn't a lot of interaction. So you had to be a lot more aware. But anytime that you are dealing with somebody that is going to the standard, the average, this is the ordinary way we do things, or this is the way we've always done it, or, you know, those kind of triggers make me go, hold up a second. We may need a second opinion. And it's okay to get a second opinion.
I agree with you. That's an important point. But let's go back to some of the things that you dealt with beyond. These are great talking parts for people who especially are starting out, or it doesn't really matter where you are along the path. It's constantly listening. But the funny things that make you the snarky person that you are, the creative person, are some of the things that I know, at least for our own family, kept us whole, was the ability to have a little lightness in a very dark environment or dark situation, and knowing when to step up and be, I'll be blunt, that SOB at times, just to say, no, I don't agree with you. Let's do this, or let's discuss it, or let's push the envelope, because my parents is unique, as you said.
And sometimes you have to do it for your own health. Sometimes you have to draw that line and say no, because crossing that line will suck all your energy out, suck all of your joy, suck all of the laughter out. And knowing those lines are important, especially when you're dealing with your parents, because if you don't cross that line and something happens, it will be easy to feel guilt because you didn't cross the line.
And for the rest of your life, in many cases, too.
Exactly.
Who wants that kind of memory? I don't care if the relationship is bad with a parent or the most amazing. The last thing we want to feel is to have our life sucked out of our bodies for the rest of our life, because we didn't have the courage to just say what needed to be said.
My mom, when she passed away, before she passed away, I knew she was coming to the end. And death is not something that has ever been something we were afraid of. We openly talked about it amongst each other, amongst our children. And so I knew. My dad and I had already talked about it, and I was helping take care of her during the day. She had a caregiver, but I did all of the errands, and I came in and made sure she was okay. And it was a Tuesday. I won't forget it. I'll never forget it. Tuesday is when the local diner in the courthouse made chicken and dressing. But it doesn't have a drive-through. It is in the middle of town. It's on a busy day. You have to find parking. And I had asked my mom, I had all my kids with me, do you want anything to eat? I'll go get you something to eat. And she wanted chicken and dressing. And I said, I will literally get you anything but that. Anywhere there's a drive-through, I have all the kids with me. And she got mad at me.
And this is the day she died.
She died. She didn't speak to me again. And she died on Saturday.
And this is a Tuesday.
Yeah. And it would have been really easy for me to feel guilty had I not given her everything that I could give her. And I gave her really good parameters. It's not like I said, I will only pick up whatever the boys want for lunch. So my point is that when you set these boundaries, it's okay. It's okay to have boundaries. And it's okay not to feel guilty because you didn't cross the boundary. You're not doing it to be hurtful. You're not doing it to be spiteful. Because there are people in your lives, and you know these people, that if you give them an inch, they take a mile, and they just keep taking from you until there's nothing left to give.
So, I call those the soul-sucking vampires.
You have to set those boundaries for yourself within the parameters of love.
You know, the food issue, I think, is something that, or the food conversation that a number of us have or hear from our loved ones who are passing. And my dad, on his deathbed, when he was not a terribly religious fellow, I think he was spiritual in many ways. We didn't discuss it a lot, but we had the pastor or the clergyman, it was basically right. The clergy from the hospice group, come in, and only because they asked, do I want it? And said, nah, I don't need anything. I'm pretty strong. And I finally said, yeah, I think I need to talk to somebody. I'm taking care of everybody else. I'm an unbiased individual, just to listen and let my own heart know it was okay, that I was doing well. Not that I needed to hear it from other people. I knew that they would say that, but just from somebody else who knew and had been around this kind of passing or any kind of passing, which is all unique. And let me know he's okay. So he asked if he could go see my dad. And I said, yeah, but no religious stuff, please. He was always he's the back pew congregationalist and dragged to church at Christmas and Easter when we were young kids. So Pastor Scott came in. He was wonderful. And he said, Stuart, is there anything I can get you? Dad was not particularly verbal at that time. He could talk, but he didn't talk a lot. And he sort of pursed his lips and closed his eyes. And he said, clam chowder. And thinking, God, he can't eat. I mean, if he eats, he's going to choke. He's going to die right there. I'm not going to have him like die on a clam. So then he said a few things and he says, that's it. And he knew that Dad was a New Englander at heart. And then at the end, before he left, he said, Stu, you know, my heart is with you, and a couple of other things. And he said, is there anything else I can get you before I leave? And Dad closed his eyes and pursed his lips. And he said, clam chowder. Unfortunately, I did not get him clam chowder. But we had clam chowder in his celebration afterwards. So, you know, I keep on saying, I can't feel guilty about not getting him clam chowder, I guess, right?
Exactly. And that's so important that you get to that place where you are comfortable in your choices so that guilt doesn't come on you afterwards. There are going to be so many times when you're going to replay everything that happened. And how could
for
you have
years to come, too?
Exactly. I mean, my mom died in 2012. So it's been a couple of days. You know,
there's that snarky. I love it.
Yeah, exactly. But the same thing happened with my dad. Is he got mad at me because he had told me he wanted to go in assisted living. He didn't want to be a burden. I had no intention of putting him in assisted living. But when his dementia started kicking in and he would get mean, and my dad had never been mean in his life. I don't think the man had ever been mean. Okay, I take that back. He was sarcastic also. He came from a family of sarcasm. I put the love into the sarcasm, which is where the snarky rainbows come from. But he could be biting in his sarcasm. But he had never been that to me, ever. In all the years my husband and I have been married, he'd never seen that. And my dad had made me cry 3-4 times since having his surgery in November, and I put him in assisted living because I just couldn't. My husband couldn't. It was stressing him out. And it's where my dad said he wanted to be anyway. And he had his own apartment and he was able to go. He was extrovert. He was able to be around people and they had entertainment all the time. I was like, this is perfect for him. But he got mad and he stayed mad at me until he died. And it was kind of funny for me because after he passed, I was like, well, you know, am I just destined to make everyone mad before they die and they just don't speak to me anymore and they die without having spoken to me? Is it me or is it them? You know, you start asking yourself these questions. But if you have made these decisions out of love and not out of emotion, then you're much more likely to set a foundation that's going to give you peace after the pass.
We're going to pause this conversation with Catherine Lang just for a moment so that you can hear a little bit about what other people are saying about elder care success. And I hope you'll chime in too. As you know, we've reached our 100th episode here on eldercaresuccess.live, and we're getting some great feedback from you and others. Here's some input from one of our listeners, Joan Monin, who's also a professor at Yale School of Medicine.
Hey, Nancy, it's Joan Monin from Yale. Thanks so much for all these wonderful tidbits of information that you constantly have available. As a researcher who's helping care partners living with dementia and just older adults in general, having all these tools is really helpful for understanding where we need to go with research, and it also really helps with my day-to-day life with my family members. I was really interested in this brainwave entrainment one that you have, and it was really just interesting to hear the process and how it could be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Joan. I appreciate your input, and I'm glad that the resources here are of value to you and your family, too. And now, back to my conversation with Catherine Lang. My conversation with Catherine Lang, the thing that caught me in her last words were, decisions made based on love give you peace after the pass. Oh, that is such a huge statement. And I think, I'm pretty sure that most of us forget that a lot, especially in the beginning of going down that journey. I think something's off. I'm not exactly sure. Is mom a little off? Is dad a little off? Or is an in-law there that needs help that the rest of the siblings can't do? And we are so emotionally charged with the situation. Why don't they do this? Why aren't they listening? Why aren't we? And we come in with such force because we are physically capable to do so at a younger age or at a different time in our life, to be strong-willed. And that's beaten into us so much, I think, sometimes by society. You get what you want if you go for it, except when we're caring for a parent or a frail person, a loved one. Sometimes kicks us in the butt or kicks us right square in the face.
Yep. And I've struggled with putting my dad in assisted living because I never wanted to. And I didn't with my father-in-law. We didn't have to put him in assisted living. We were able to get extra care for my mom, so we didn't have to put her in assisted living. Dad did all the primary care at night. So there were a lot of different factors that allowed us not to have to do that with other family members. And it hurt my feelings that I wasn't holding up to my promise. But my husband and I sat down. He said that we couldn't make this decision out of emotions, and we couldn't definitely make decisions out of fear. We had to come at it with honesty and out of love, and really take into consideration not just my dad, but my family, my son, my husband, myself, and whether or not this was truly the best choice for him. And when we lined everything up, it was the best thing for everybody, and he was going to be happiest here. He wasn't going to be happy anywhere because he wasn't happy with the circumstances. And sometimes that's going to happen when we're caring for somebody that's sick, when we're caring for somebody that's elderly. They're unhappy with what's going on in their lives, and they're going to take it out on the people closest to them because that's the safest people. If that makes sense.
It does make sense. And fear happens out of ignorance in many cases. Placing that comment even on somebody that we're taking care of when they're fearful, when they're angry, they're not in control and they're unaware. Ignorant may not be the right word in this particular case, but they're unaware of what's going to happen to them. They know.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
do we. But facing that and understanding that is frightening because we have lost control. And maybe that's okay sometimes, just to say, you know what, it is what it is. Let's face with the facts at the current point in time, like one step at a time is part, some of the things that you do, like little tiny bits. You don't need to eat the whole elephant at once.
You maybe can't just the, eat maybe the just whole the elephant at
the
once.
It's okay.
You know? Yeah. I mean, it's quit trying. Yeah. Quit trying to do it all. Do what you can. And that's why, you know, I talk about focused flexibility and everything I do, because I have to be focused on the big goals and flexible in how I get there. And when it comes to caring for anybody, a sick child, a sick parent, a sick spouse. Lord have mercy, a sick husband.
Oh, yeah. Been there, done that. Not good.
Yeah, that takes it to a whole new level right there. But you have to be flexible in still getting to where you are aiming to go. I was building a full-time writing business. I was homeschooling three boys, and I was helping take care of my mom. I was helping take care of an aunt. I was helping to take care of an uncle. I was helping to take care of a father-in-law. It seemed that every time somebody passed away, somebody else came along that needed assistance.
And we just filled that void right there.
Yep. And we had to keep flexing in order to get there and be okay with how we flex. So my husband and I rotated. I would do days. He would do nights. We rarely saw each other, but we had, because we were open and communicating, we continued our relationship, even though we weren't in the same space all the time. Open communication.
That's a really good point. And I want to bring that up because so many times I hear about the stress that that puts on a marital relationship or the stress that it puts on siblings who aren't the ones doing the extra hands-on, doing the extra hands-on care. And they don't see what's happening, the changes that are taking place day to day, or understanding the financial situation that enables you and the rest of the family to actually allow the best quality care at the time for those that you're overseeing or charged for.
Yeah. It is the communication is essential. And when we were taking care of my husband's aunt, I would go during the days and he would go stay the nights. And mainly because they had hospice there during the day and I didn't have the strength to pick her up and move her around as she needed. So my husband was there at night. But we were doing a purpose-driven life. He had found a copy of the purpose-driven life. He would read it at night. I would read it in the morning. And then when we did have time to sit down together, we had something to talk about in our journey other than the care of his aunt, because it is important to continue to nurture the relationships beyond the care of whoever, because eventually that's not going to be there. And you want to continue building the connections and the engagement with your other loved ones, as well as the one that you're caring for.
Another really great point, because you talk about filling that void. It's not really a void, but when somebody passes, and unlike you, there isn't somebody else to pick up, and somebody else needs help. You know, we don't have to continue to do this for umpteen individuals. You just happen to be the lucky one to get that trifecta. But when we are so committed to doing so for somebody, there's that hole. And sometimes we don't know how to fill it because we've let our own life go. And that's not healthy for ourselves or for others. Or we get sick and wither ourselves. And that's not what anybody we were caring for would want for us. So keeping the relationship, whether it be with a spouse or a partner or just a friendship going.
Yeah.
And it could even be a relationship with yourself, right? My aunt and my cousin, her daughter, would read to each other these, I guess, spiritual devotionals. But it was interesting that my cousin shared with me one day. She goes, my mom had actually put a note and a tag in one of them that she liked. And the day she died, that was the last one that they shared with one another. So it's interesting to see how those little things that you share give you that strength to continue. And it gave her the strength to continue to go for it. It's like, God, I think her mom knew what was going to happen and when was going to happen. And she tagged it as, this is our sort of special secret. It's okay.
Yeah. And I think a lot of time, especially if you're open to the conversation, that they know when they're going to go, or they know the time is coming near. It is the, like you said, the people that aren't around them on a regular basis that tend to not be aware. Or I think guilt plays into it. And guilt says, no, they're not going to leave us because I haven't spent enough time with them. They can't leave yet.
How rude of them.
But that's what we, guilt does that to us. Guilt makes us do stupid stuff and say stupid things that make no sense. And I mean, you can show something to somebody in black and white and they will ignore it because their personal guilt wants the situation to be different.
For them, not necessarily the person who's in the situation of or in the process of leaving us or dying.
Exactly. And that's why I say it's so important to draw those lines, because if you've drawn those lines and you know where your limits are and you know you have gone into the decisions with peace and with love for each other and not with emotions, then the guilt that's going to come try to come in and drive wedges can't make it in there through you. Don't be a wedger.
That's very difficult when you've got a family that is at odds from a very early age. And they say that when you become a caregiver, it's not if, it's when. At some point in time, you're going to be responsible. You're always responsible for yourself first. And then having a responsibility to, I'm doing a podcast on that, where the difference between responsibility for and responsibility to are two big issues to consider. But that's for another conversation. But when you got the stress of a bad relationship with siblings to begin with, that makes it a lot more difficult. And hopefully you're able to sort that out. But it's known that the caregiver will tend, and their siblings will tend, to revert to how things were when you were kids.
I did not know that.
Yes. Very interesting, right? We all of a sudden revert to mommy needs this, daddy needs that. We become their children, even though we were caring for them. But the behavior among the siblings can tend to revert back to the way we were as children, predominantly if we haven't grown up and learned to become adults ourselves and have those discussions. Now, we're not going to have every single one. Like, I pulled my sister's hair and she pulled mine and I blamed her, so I got away with it. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But even still,
the more you got away with it, the more you got away with. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It just kind of escalates from there.
Right.
Yeah. Personalities are going to be involved, of course. As an extrovert, it's a whole lot easier for you to go into a situation and not be hesitant. Because I don't think extroverts have hesitant genes. I think that the extroverts tend to be, I'm here and everybody should know it.
Well, and I think as extroverts too, it's at least for myself, I call myself an intro extrovert, because at times it's good to be quiet.
Oh, yeah.
That's hard. The other times is I'm out all the time, and being able to talk about it, even to strangers, what was going on, you know, in the line, oh, are you a nurse? Are you a doctor? Are you an aide? And see them in scrubs. Tell me more about that. Well, let me tell you what's going on. It's like, all right, maybe you don't want to talk to me, but that said, it was a way for me to relieve the stress, because I didn't have anybody who could, and most of us don't, who would listen without just saying, don't worry, dearie, everything's going to be fine. Just getting it out sometimes is a stress reliever and helps us sort through the issues that are going on. Like, how am I going to deal with this if I don't talk about it and I don't become, like, I call it the verbal diarrhea queen? It's not going to get solved, because it's how my brain thinks and figures things out.
It's interesting. Nurses and nurses more than doctors, because doctors won't do it where you can see them, but doctors do it. They laugh. They laugh at work. They laugh no matter what ward they're working on. They find times to laugh. And when they can connect with somebody that is willing to laugh as well, they understand that you recognize laughter doesn't mean I don't care about your circumstance. Laughter doesn't mean I don't care about your situation. Laughter doesn't mean I don't know it's a dire moment in your life. My son was in a car wreck, and it had caused some issues, and he was at the hospital. And I, of course, was staying, and I came out to go get coffee. And when I walked past the nurse's station, they had the whiteboard up that talks, you know, for the crash cart, and they had the number for the crash cart, and below it was the guy's name. Now, I know this isn't how he pronounced it, but this is what I read. It said, today's crash cart is Jesus. And I laughed till I cried because I was like, well, you know, if you're going to have somebody on your crash cart, that's who you want on your crash cart. And the nurse looked at me and then she looked up at it and it had never dawned on her to read it that way. But as soon as I pointed it out, she started rolling. She called the others over. So they had a nice little break there in the middle of the night to know that Jesus was monitoring the crash cart that day.
I love it. I love it.
So they don't mind. And I know other people do, but that's because they don't understand that laughter doesn't mean I don't care. Laughter is a release valve. It releases the stress. It releases the steam. It releases the anger. It releases the depression. And caring for people that you know are getting ready to cross over, as my dad would always say, they're getting ready to cross over. It is depressing for everybody.
There's a finality about it. And that's, I was thinking about that the other day. We talked about crossing over and dying or using words that don't mean death, right? That's our way of dealing with making it more gentle on those of us that are left behind. Not saying that we want to go there at the same time, ideally, but we want to be there for somebody. And it's done. I mean, it's done. It's done. There's no let's kiss the boo-boo and go forward. You know, it's like our parents did. And everything's going to be better. It's going to hurt today. It's going to hurt for a long time, but it's just boom, it's done.
Yeah.
I think that's the hardest part of dealing with caring for somebody that you love is that when it happens, it happens. There's no stopping it. You can't make it better.
Yeah. And everybody's going to react differently. It so frustrated me when my mom passed away. And I knew it was coming and I had been helping care for her. So it wasn't a shock to my system. And I had mourned multiple times in the process. And everybody kept coming up to me and saying, you'll break down eventually. Well, number one, I'm just not a breakdown kind of person. If I break down, it's because of hopelessness. And I have so much hope in me, it rarely ever shows up. And I just kept looking at them going, quit putting that on me. That's not how. Now, did I mourn? Do I still right now putting out Christmas decorations that I haven't seen in 3.5 years because of the tornado? And my mom's Christmas decorations are in there. And do I go, this is one of her favorite times of the year. Right. Have there been a few tears? Yeah, there have been a few tears, but I haven't broken down. And that's not how I do it. But you're going to mourn their loss. Just like if somebody went on a trip or they moved away back before, you know, Facebook, where you can tag anybody and be in contact with anybody. Back in the old days, when somebody moved away, they were gone.
Yeah. Adios, amigos. It's right.
Exactly. Yeah.
They're not coming back. Maybe, yep. But not.
So that is the way that you'll have these moments where all of a sudden you pick up the phone to call. And it dawns on you as you're about to dial, or even after it starts ringing, what you're doing.
Their voice on a voicemail message, and that's a hard one. I want to bring up the subject of breaking down and crying, because I think this is an important one for everybody to understand that we do not need to conform to what others expect. And this point, I mean, you said that, it just hit home, because I'm kind of like you. I don't do a lot of crying. I don't break it down. When I do, I'm physically exhausted or something just sort of like tweaks and it's maybe the eyes get a little watery. I put eye drops in type of thing. That's about it. But although I cried really hard when my first dog died, oh my God, you know, I called my dad and he just didn't know what to do. I never experienced that before. I was heartbroken and I couldn't stop it. So in this particular case, the hospice social worker came in because I wanted them to be there for the aides, the girls and my sister, in case they needed to talk to somebody afterwards and what to deal with mom. And the hospice worker said, Nancy, you go out, you go to the beach, you go someplace else, you go away, we'll be fine. You go and cry. You have to go cry. You have to cry. I'm like, I don't have to. I don't like the beach. Yes, we're in Florida. I don't like the beach.
That's because no, sand gets everywhere.
Yeah, it's true. But I was so insulted and incensed that she didn't take the time to even care whether this was my way of mourning or not. My way of mourning was caring for somebody else, showing there and being present for somebody else. And quiet time. I can drive in the quiet, just alone, being there, just thinking about it with my thoughts. But to insist that I had to go to the beach. So I went to the beach and I tried and I said, Dad, okay, here's the deal. I don't know if you can hear me, but this is the dumbest thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah, don't conform. All it's going to do is hinder your process for healing. If you try to do healing the way somebody else tells you you have to do healing, it's going to hinder your process for healing because you go back to you're a unique, your parents were unique, the doctor has to see you as a unique patient. Your healing process is going to be unique to you. So when I have friends now that have a mother or father pass away or that they're dealing with their caregiving, I reach out to them personally and say, I just want you to know I'm here. I went through something similar. I've been through this journey. I've been through this process, and I'm here to encourage you on your unique way, whatever you need, because we're all going to need something different.
I love that. A dear friend of mine who has since passed, we were close in some really funny ways, and she was Chinese, and she had some expressions, one which I love and still use to this day, predominantly from a business perspective. She says, Nancy, when the horse is dead, get off and walk. I was like, okay, Diane, I get it. But not many people know when that horse is dead. She goes, nope, they don't know when the horse is dead and they don't know how to walk. So we had a lot of conversations about that. But she said the best way to help somebody with mourning, especially if you're sending a card. And I think cards make a difference. They help. They're just handwritten. They're that whether it's a good card or not, it doesn't matter that you've just put some thought into it. She said, don't just say deepest sympathies, I'm sorry, whatever. Find one little story that you remember about that person, that unique story, and share it with them. It doesn't need to be long, but it's a memory that you may have that they may not have. And so you've given them a gift of, oh my God, I didn't know how this person actually touched my friend's life or that person's life. And it gives them one more thing, one more gift to hold on to. So every time I think of that, even if I don't know the person well, I might say, here's something that I know about you that your mom, your dad, your loved one loved. So it's a different way to spin the story if you don't have a story to share. And I think that's kind of special.
Yeah. And it goes back to relationships. It is about that personal engagement in a unique way. Because ultimately, that's what it's all about. We are investing in other people, always from a place of love and limits, because you can't give all that you have into other people. You have to continue to fuel yourself in order to be in a position. You're a conduit of encouragement, of hope, of light. But if you don't have anything to flow through, then you don't have anything to give.
I have one more thing before we go, because you have cared for so many in your family, whether they be blood family or by marriage or some other relationship. You brought them into your life to be there for them. And obviously, you've learned a few things along the way. What's one thing that happened in the course of your caregiving journey that you didn't expect to happen, that you were surprised about? And how did you get through that?
There have been a lot. And one of the things I have learned is that I am a lightning rod. For better or for worse, that is one of my gifts. When people are frustrated and angry and emotions are pent up, I become the target. And it is because I'm a duck. Everything just washes right off my back. I just don't take it personal. And I have a lot of hair. Don't know if you noticed, but I have a lot of hair. So I have learned how to brush hair, long hair. And my aunt, my husband's aunt had longer hair and her sister has short hair. And her sister really wanted to do something special. So she was trying to brush the aunt's hair. And I said, if you'll take the hair and you'll hold it at the nape of the neck right there, you can brush it and it won't pull, because she was worried about pulling the hair. And she turned on me like a banshee. Said, "You don't know anything." And I just
you might know about this.
And so it taught me that people are going to lash out in unexpected, unrelated ways, and it's not personal. And if you take it personal, all you do is hinder the opportunity for engagement and relationship. I just simply went, okay, because in truth, I don't know everything. I did know that. But I could tell that she was hurting. She was losing her sister. And it goes back to that guilt thing. And I recognized it for what it is. So I think the number one thing I have learned over all of these situations is that be willing to look beyond the surface reaction of the people around you and don't respond in emotion.
That's a really good closing thought. I love that. We're so tied into the tactics, the things that we have to do, that sometimes we don't know how to behave or how to react or act without closing the door bluntly on somebody else and changing our own life and their life forever. I mean, it's going to happen anyway with the passing of somebody that we love. So now, if you're listening, and hopefully you're listening to this point, remember that thing in the beginning that I told you about? Well, midway through our show, we heard Professor Joan Monin share a little bit about one of the shows that she liked about brainwave entrainment with Murray Zelkovich, a friend of mine. And he's done some very interesting work. I've used his recordings as well, just to make my nights a little less sleepless. So if you're interested and you're having a rough night's sleep, listen to some of Murray's work. It might give you some peace of mind and a few extra Z's as well. Now, one more thing before we go. I wanted to share something about my guest, Catherine Lang. You see, I mentioned something about a tornado early on in the show. And what you don't know is that Catherine and her family lived through a tornado. Not just a little one, but a big one, where their house was flattened right to the ground. She and her husband and some other family members managed to survive. In addition to all of that, she's a caregiver. She's managed to keep a smile on her face, a lesson that we can all learn even in the deepest, darkest days of caregiving, or maybe even a tornado. I thought her story was important, and I hope that this one is of value to you too. And that's it for another episode of Doing It Best with Elder Care Success. Thank you, Catherine, so much for being here with me today as my guest. I think you are one of the most enlightening, lighthearted, and real people that I've spoken to in a long time. And if you were a guest before, don't take that personally.
I'm just amazing like that.
You're just an amazing person. We're all amazing in our own unique ways.
Exactly.
And we have to remember that. Thanks again, Catherine. It's been a joy. It's been a pleasure. And lessons learned along the way.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to being an encouragement with you more in the future.
You got it. And as I said in the beginning, if you like this show, please share it with a friend, a family member, or even a stranger that you see that's going through the stress and strain of taking care of a loved one. Because you know what? It's really lonely doing so. And we don't have to do this alone. It can be your gift to them because it's our gift to you. We'll see you soon at Elder Care Success on YouTube, and we'll hear you soon on future episodes here at eldercaresuccess.live, the podcast. Take care, be well, and be strong. Bye-bye.
This show is sponsored by CareManity, the publishers of How to Survive 911 Medical Emergencies, a step-by-step guide before, during, and after. For your own personalized free file of life, go to www.howtosurvive911.com. All trademarks, brands, and comments are not intended to be substitutes for medical, financial, or legal advice. Please consult a medical, legal, or financial professional for issues relevant to your own personal situation. This show is produced by CareManity LLC. All rights reserved. Copyright CareManity LLC.